Hello and welcome to this episode of the ESG Fitness Podcast. Today I want to talk about self-esteem. That was a really long pause. I was just thinking. The previous podcast we just did, who am I now? Jeez. Was on self-confidence and self-efficacy. So this is kind of like part two to that podcast. So if we think of self-efficacy as your belief in your capability in a given situation or your competence in a given task, self-esteem is different. So self-esteem is a more global view of your self-worth. So self-efficacy might be, I am very good at running. And self-esteem might be, I am generally a good person.
I had not plugged in my microphone. A simple definition of self-esteem is an individual's subjective evaluation of their worth. And to put into context how important this is, Carl Rogers, who was a humanistic psychologist, theorized that the origin of many people's problems is that they, I mean, this is quite extreme, but that they despise themselves and consider themselves worthless and incapable of being loved, which is really sad. Anyway, this is why Rogers believed in the importance of giving unconditional acceptance to a client and that when this is done, it would improve a client's self-esteem. In his therapy sessions with clients, he offered positive regard no matter what. Indeed, the concept of self-esteem is approached since then in humanistic psychology. Why can't I read today? As an inalienable right. I've never heard of that word before. Inalienable. Anyway, for every person, summarized in the following sentence. Every human being, with no exception, is worthy of unconditional respect of everybody else. He deserves to esteem himself and to be esteemed. There you go. I'm going to stop reading from Wikipedia now and get on to my point. We discussed this in the EIQ Student Live this morning, and it was interesting because Amelia and I had quite different opinions on this. Which happens quite a lot, which is probably the reason that the lives are so good, because we disagree on a lot of things. Like, we agree on the core fundamentals, but then we have differing opinions, which makes really interesting debate. So I had made the observation that I see a lot of my clients increase their self-confidence, their self-esteem, their self-efficacy, when they lose body fat, or when they diet, or when more broadly when they work with me. But I'd said it in the context of dieting. And Amelia, rightly pointed out that the research indicates that dieting actually lowers your self-esteem. And my counter to this is that shit diets lower your self-esteem. Shit coaches lower your self-esteem. Diet culture probably lowers your self-esteem, right? I 100% agree with all these things. But good coaching, a sensible diet, and it coming from a place of empowerment, in my experience, massively increases people's self-esteem. And I would sort of put that research along with the other research about 95% of diets failing. Yeah, 95% of diets are crap, like with no ongoing support and no consideration of maintenance. And we have this preconceived notion that diets have an end point. Yeah, diets that have an end point, I'd agree, probably 95% of them would fail. But diets that don't have an end point, with the end point is maintenance for the rest of your life, I don't think the stats would be the same, but there isn't the research on that. So I kind of feel the same about this. Like, yeah, because most diets are crap, then I would, yeah, probably doesn't surprise me that most diets result in reduced self-esteem. Because if we look back at the other fact of most diets failing, and actually something that reduces self-esteem is failing, especially on something as personal as dieting, which I'm kind of about to come onto, I can completely see why that would reduce someone's self-esteem. Something that I have noticed with clients and is a key reason I think losing weight can have such a huge impact on people is that low self-efficacy in fat loss, so low belief that you can achieve fat loss, leads to or at least contributes to low self-esteem. This is completely my hypothesis, by the way. I don't have research to back this up. Just, to be fair, quite a lot of anecdotal experience. And I don't know if I want to go down this route, but I do kind of call into question quote-unquote evidence, especially in more social sciences, due to the replication crisis, which if anyone wants to have a little Wikipedia of that, you'll see what I mean. But it's essentially the observation that research findings don't appear to be able to be replicated. And one of the most famous examples of this was a study that tried to replicate 100 psychology studies. And these were all in 3 of the highest ranking psychology journals. So they should be quite robust studies. And overall, 36% of the replications yielded significant results, compared to 97% of the original studies that had found significant results. And the mean effect size in these replications was approximately half the magnitude of the effect size reported in the original studies. So in other words, in layman's terms, the vast majority of studies of the study findings couldn't be replicated. And when they were, the magnitude of that effect was much smaller than what had been initially reported. Interesting. But anyway, back to my hypothesis, which also hasn't been found significant. And who knows if it's replicable? Me, I know. But anyway, here we go. So my theory is that a believed inability to shape your own body or have autonomy or control over your health and fitness leads to a generally lower level of self-worth, or at least is associated with a lower self-esteem in general. Again, just an observation from the people I've worked with. And often when we fail on diets, coming back to that 95% of at least crap diets probably fail, we don't just deem ourselves failures in that very small pursuit, i.e. fat loss, but more generally. And I can understand why, because you live in your body. It's quite easy to accept that, I don't know, you're bad at tennis and that have no impact on your general self-worth. Like, it doesn't really say anything about me that I'm not very good at tennis. But an inability to control your body is, I guess, inescapable. Like, I can very easily escape tennis. It's not a huge part of my life. I don't know why I've chosen that as an example, but it rarely comes up in my day-to-day life. Whereas I live inside my body, so there's that constant reminder. It's inescapable. And this is why helping people to lose fat is so rewarding. Because in itself, it's quite a small and often inconsequential, pursuit. Obviously, it can have huge health benefits. But one of the most impactful and underrated benefits, I think, is the psychological benefit of improved self-esteem. And that's probably the most rewarding thing for me as a coach, is seeing people's increased self-efficacy in their ability in fitness and dieting and fat loss and gaining muscle and exercise. That leading to generally liking themselves more, generally respecting themselves more, and that increased self-esteem, that increased perception of self, self-worth. That is why I coach. Like, that is what gets me going. Not seeing someone like, oh wow, this physical transformation is great, it's a transformation photo, well done. It's how they feel. That's what's so rewarding. Otherwise, I would have got bored of this you know, probably 1 year in, I'd be like, oh yeah, well, kind of done that, can tick that off. There's not much reward in that. But when you see someone light up and their confidence increase so much, and just that belief that they can achieve these things, your belief that you can do difficult things and be successful, that translates to every area of your life. It is quite hard to capture in a transformation photo that you generally feel better, that you're more confident, and that you view yourself in a better light in all aspects of your life. But that is the end goal. And this is why I disagree when people think that fat loss is a fickle pursuit, or the anti-diet crowd blanket all diets as bad. And there are some awful diets out there, and diet culture is vile. But when it's done the right way, dieting can be really empowering. And really, the dieting part of dieting isn't the thing. And I can't articulate this in the right way, but it's not the dieting. It's everything else that comes with it. That's just often the vehicle. It's just the method of achieving something that's quite hard to do. Or to put that in another way, could this be done without fat loss? Yes. Fat loss is the byproduct here. If you can gain the feeling of autonomy, control, empowerment, and achievement without losing fat, then fantastic. And depending on your start point, that's probably where you might want to be. Maybe you do have some fat to lose, maybe you don't. But my observation is that a lot of the time, the two do come hand in hand. But what I don't want people to misunderstand here is that they are by no means causal. And losing fat can also do absolutely nothing for your self-esteem or make it worse. Is everything else that goes around it. I think part of it is the being in charge of your body and being like, yeah, I said I was going to do this thing and I've done it. Like, I made a promise to myself and I stuck to it, and that feels really good. And now I'm developing trust within myself that actually, when I try other hard things, I'm going to be able to achieve those too. I'm not going to go into the health benefits of fat loss here because I feel like I've done that previously. And anyone who's claiming that there are no health benefits to losing weight if you're overweight, then that's a podcast for another day. Today, I really wanted to hammer home the psychological benefits that I think are massively underrated. And just to caveat, which I think I've done throughout this, when you do it right, not when you shame yourself into losing fat, not when you think that you should or you're forcing it, but when you're doing it from a place of love and empowerment and self-respect. And the more hard and challenging things you do, the more self-respect you will have, and thus in turn, the more hard, challenging things you will do. I'm not sure if this is my echo chamber or the fact that I follow a lot of Amelia's work, but I feel like we focus quite a lot on the negative psychological outcomes of dieting or diet culture, but rarely do we talk about how people who diet and exercise in the right way seem to walk into a room with more confidence. And there probably isn't a better feeling than having genuinely high levels of self-esteem, because it's your belief in yourself and it's how you view yourself. Self-esteem is often described as the feeling of liking and respecting yourself, and is claimed to be the foundation principle of success and happiness. When you put it like that, pretty important. So my point is, it's not the body change, i.e. loss of body fat or increased muscle mass, per se that has the biggest impact in most of the clients I work with. It's this increased self-efficacy in the pursuit of a goal. And when I say goal, like goal here being a change in body composition, that is actually so integral to you because it's your body. And then that what results from that is increased self-esteem because you've achieved something hard that you've potentially struggled with for a really long time. And I actually get excited talking about this stuff because that's why I love coaching. On the surface, it might look like personal trainers just help people get in shape for their holiday. But it is so much more than that. And I feel like the anti-diet crowd don't get that. And it makes me sad because it's probably because they're blinkered by their own negative experiences of dieting. And maybe they're not in a place where they're ready to get coached by someone who's actually empowering them to change as opposed to shaming them into change. I've just got up my good friend Wikipedia. Actually, possibly one of my best friends. Could Wikipedia be a friend? I don't know. We're pretty tight though. Anyway, it has a list of characteristics of someone with low self-esteem. And I think it's interesting to look through this and then compare it to people with high self-esteem. So people with low self-esteem tend to heavily criticize themselves. They have high levels of dissatisfaction. They're hypersensitive to criticism, with resentments against critiques and feelings of being attacked if they're criticized. They have chronic indecision and an exaggerated fear of mistakes. They have an excessive will to please and an unwillingness to displease. They tend to be perfectionists, which can lead to frustration when perfection is not achieved. I speak about that quite a lot. They experience more guilt. They dwell or exaggerate on the magnitude of their past mistakes. They have floating hostility and general defensiveness, irritability without identifiable cause. They are pessimistic and have a general negative outlook. They experience envy and general resentment. They see temporary setbacks as permanent, and they are intolerable of conditions. So not a great position to be in. And when I read that, I just think, how hard would it be to be in that position and then try and have a growth mindset? As I read it, I'm like, this is the complete opposite of a growth mindset. This is the complete opposite of the ability to accept that there will be setbacks in life and not see them as failures and see them as learning opportunities. And then when we look at the list of characteristics for people with high levels of self-esteem, we've got things like a firm belief in certain values and principles, and a readiness to defend them even when finding there is opposition to this, feeling secure enough to modify them in the light of experience. They have the ability to act according to what they think is the best choice, trusting their own judgment and not feeling guilty when others do not like their choice. Values. They do not lose time worrying excessively about what happened in the past, nor what could happen in the future. They learn from the past and plan for the future, but live in the present. Great attributes. They fully trust in their capacity to solve problems, not hesitating after failures or difficulties. They ask others for help if they need it. They consider themselves equal in dignity to others rather than inferior or superior, while accepting differences in certain talents. It basically goes on to say loads of other nice things that you would want to be. And then it finishes off with the attribute of being able to work towards finding solutions and voicing content without belittling themselves or others when challenges arise, which quite nicely describes the kind of person that I hope to be, or hope that I am. And my point by going through that list of characteristics of someone with low self-esteem and someone with high self-esteem was kind of just to highlight the importance of self-esteem in those characteristics. And it kind of links into something I have spoken about a couple of times, which is that self-loathing, or like low opinion of yourself, and constantly belittling yourself or putting yourself down and negative self-talk is actually really self-absorbed, because you're constantly thinking about yourself. Whereas self-confidence, having high self-esteem and actually liking yourself, means that you have much more time to think about others because you're not preoccupied with hating yourself. I think sometimes there is a resistance to high self-esteem or high self-confidence because it comes across as... Actually, I don't even know if it does. I don't think really confident people do come across as cocky, but I think that's the fear for a lot of people, that it comes across as cocky or that I'm better than other people. And actually, that's kind of the opposite of what it is. When you like yourself, you will actually think about yourself less, because you'll be less self-critical, and then you can spend more time thinking about others. The most self-critical people spend the most time thinking about themselves. I'm going to finish here, but hopefully this podcast gives you something to ponder and maybe think about. And I've enjoyed it because I get to talk about my favourite thing about coaching. If you are interested in coaching, then you can head to esgfitness.co.uk. If you would like some business mentoring, you can head to appliedfitnessmentoring.com. And if you've liked this discussion and you enjoy discussions like this, and you also want to learn a bit more about nutrition and develop your nutrition coaching service, then you can head to eiqnutrition.com. Finally, as ever, if you have enjoyed this podcast, please do share, because it makes all the difference. And I'm really interested in your feedback, especially on this podcast, to know if people agree or disagree, or what your thoughts are on this topic. Whatever you're doing today, have a lovely day.